Welcome back to the Electrify Podcast, brought to you by the creators of Electrify Expo, North America's largest EV festival coming to a major city near you.
Well, guess what? We're live on X. And I was just about to say that because we're saying Twitter, but our guest most recently interviewed the gentleman that now owns X. But I heard an interview, that New York Times one, that he actually called it Twitter himself. So it's an easy mistake to make. Just obviously conditioning and what we've known it as, but we have a special guest. I say we because Matt is joining me once again with all his great knowledge of just EV and his take on things. It's just a refreshing, well-educated approach, but also eager to find out and fact find. Speaking of fact finding and breaking things down, this gentleman, I love this nickname, the Teardown Titan. I feel like we have a superhero in the building and he's going to break things down, both our minds and our bodies and our cars and all this. But just found out Sandy's not his real name, but Sandy Monroe joins us here and we hit live here and Sandy says, I'm having a great day because I'm here. And Sandy, thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, welcome. I'm happy to be here. Like I said already. Yeah, I have to repeat myself all the time. You get old, you gotta live the image. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and you do a great job just researching you and getting educated on what you do and how you do it. You've been really known and defined this basically ideology and method of the lean, right? Like what do you call it? The lean design lean methodology. Design, yeah.
Yep.
What I'm just going to start with that because you have such great knowledge. You most recently interviewed and broke down the Cybertruck. You were with Elon. So obviously that's real buzzworthy in the EV world. But how would you break down that lean design methodology?
The method we use is analytical. Most engineers would look at a problem and solve it in their head. And as a rule, they leave a lot on the table. When you leave a lot on the table, you don't make the money and kind of there's usually quality problems and stuff like that. So what we did was we took engineering and stepped it up and put every decision into an equation. And the equation answer is in the universal language, money. Because if you don't make money, you probably shouldn't be doing whatever you're doing, at least if you're in business. If it's a hobby, I don't care about. But if you're in business, you have to have an analytical way of determining whether you're going in the right direction. So our process basically looks first at how many parts do you really need? And so we've got two questions you ask yourself. One is, does this part have to be a fundamentally different material? And then the second one is, does this part have to move with relationship to all the other parts that are there? And then we go in, make it a little tougher for the engineer and say, oh, by the way, screws or any other fastening device, that doesn't count. That's always going to be a no. Springs are always going to be a no. And belts are always going to be a no. So that could also include sometimes gears because they're a transmission device. So you put these things together and what you wind up with is the optimal number of parts. The perfect number of parts for whatever it is that you're designing and whatnot. So everybody knows it's a Teardown Titan and we get a lot of acclaim for tearing things to pieces and analyzing them. We do a lot more than that. Right. We actually design stuff. So a good example is the BMW Mini, the first one when it was in its infancy, like a sketch. BMW brought us in and we worked with the folks over at Rover and we came up with a very good product with a very good engine. So we did both the engine transmission transaxle actually, and the product and it sold like hotcakes and it was profitable in the first year. We also worked on the 787. I was brought in by Alan Mulally. There was five people on the original team. And guess what? Two of them. I got to figure out where this is. Oh, yeah, here. Two of them actually were myself and Dan McCarthy. So the other three were Alan Mulally and two other guys who Alan Mulally fired later on. And that was the start of the 787. And we worked on that until they were into production. We've worked on everything from Barbie to the space station. And it usually involves new product development. And that's really what we do for a living, is new product development. So when people come along and say, oh, you're the teardown titan, I go, oh, okay, fine. I'll take whatever I can get. But but at the end of the day, we've worked on spaceships. We've worked on any kind of vehicle you could imagine.
You worked on barbecues. You worked on grills.
I did.
I'm right here next to my barbecue before we hit record. Yeah. Like, what kind of grill is that? Yeah.
And then you told me, and I said, oh, those guys are really expensive. So, but no, we've worked on pretty much anything you can think of. Medical devices. Some of my favorite success stories are things like the intravenous pump we did, that it went from basically like everybody else and losing market share to dominating the marketplace because we added a new feature and function, which was neonatal. It could be used on babies, and that instantly made it so that it was the market leader. So that's kind of like what we do, really. The interviews and the other stuff, that's all icing on the cake. But yeah, really,
that's what people get to see, new right? Stuff.
Well, yeah. You get to see what we do, but it usually takes 3 years. And then I have to wait a year at least for NDAs to go away. So, yeah, that's kind of like what we do for real. Yeah,
Matt, go ahead, man. What do you got? What's at the tip of your tongue? We got Sandy here.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, in recent years, you know, and again, as the Teardown Titan, Sandy, you know, people look to you and you have a very practical and pragmatic approach to addressing, you know, how something should be done. And there's a lot of fluff out there as to what technology is being developed, how it's being built, how it's being utilized, why it's beneficial. And I think the appreciation I have for a lot of the things I've seen from your videos and from your interviews and just your take on things is you just cut through a lot of the noise. And you look at it from the perspective of, as you pointed out, is it going to be financially viable from a business perspective? But at the end of the day, is it quality engineering? And I think that's the thing that most people don't appreciate, quality engineering, when they're using it. All they know is, gosh, this works. And it doesn't make me think that hard. And that's the result of what you just described. I think, do you feel like, it's a question I would have, is you've been kind of at this now on the EV side of it and what you've been looking at both from Tesla and obviously legacy OEMs and their development process and what they've been doing. And do you think there is actual progress being made with regard to the approach? Or do you feel that it still is in a place where it's kind of a parts bin approach, and as you're tearing things down from legacy, you're still seeing that they don't have that approach that will springboard them into where they could make EVs more effectively and engineer them more effectively?
Okay, so there's a distinct difference between the legacy automakers and the others.
Right.
So I'm going to kind of make it so that we can talk about, or you'll know which ones I'm talking about. When I'm talking about legacy, the big three, Toyota, Honda, Mazda, whoever, BMW, Mercedes, those are the legacy manufacturers. The ones that are a little different are all the Chinese companies, Tesla, Rivian, and Aptera. Those are companies that are new, and they think entirely different. And the reason for that is because, as Elon said a few times, he doesn't like to hire HR people, and he definitely doesn't like to hire MBAs. Once you have an MBA mentality, it's impossible to innovate. You can't do it. The answer for every question is no, you can't do it. If you don't do it that way, then you fall into the trap of losing your position or losing your job or taking a risk that you may fail. And that's why at Monroe, the company will pay for anybody that wants to get a master's or even in an undergrad kind of a situation. If you're going and you have a passing grade, we'll pay for it. But I will not pay for anything outside of technology. A guy wants to get an MBA, good, get it on your own. You're going to be next to worthless for me, because engineers are cheapskates to turn. That's a fact. They're cheapskates to start out with. And then on top of that, now I'm going to give you justification for being a cheapskate. Nah, that ain't going to work. So Elon is not a fan. Neither am I. We have a fabulous HR person, which I wouldn't trade for anybody. And she does a great job at protecting the company, whereas most HR people, not so much. What they really do is they make it, they put in a counterculture kind of a thing. Elon and I started getting into it a little bit, but he had his kid there, one of his kids there, and he'd finished off his bag of Cheetos, and he was now very much interested in getting the hell out. So I could see him. So Elon was in front of me, but I could see this kid going, hey.
Cheetos, more Cheetos.
More Cheetos, Dad. Yeah. So, but anyway, so we didn't get into it too much. Probably just as well. Otherwise, you know, somebody, there'd be protesters outside of my office or something. But that kind of stuff really doesn't lend itself to the American way of getting the job done. It's kind of European, but not good for us.
Well, yeah, and mentality wise, it's also the product that's being built. If we're talking about, you know, the EV space and kind of how Tesla's approached it,
yeah.
I think that what you're describing, you know, that lack of curiosity, you just kind of get placed into that position, and your job is to just keep the job, not to actually ask the questions.
Well, at the end of the day, the asking of questions doesn't disappear with the, the counterculture kind of stuff. But what it does do is it gives you a nice, easy pillow to rest on. And when people are resting, they're no damn good at all. I call it, I used to have a name for it. But anyways, if you think of it this way, think about if you're in a hammock and it's a warm day and you got a margarita in your hand and you're swaying back and forth, right? How fast?
Should I close my eyes for this? Cause it's
I know. Yeah, you could. You could if you want, but don't. Okay. You're too, that creepy stuff already has gone by. We're not getting that shit. Okay. So anyhow, how fast does your brain move?
Yeah.
Now picture yourself and you're the pilot in a 777. All the engines are out and you're headed for the earth. How fast is your brain going now? Okay. So here's the deal. Every time someone says, oh, we have to have a comfortable environment for all our employees. Well, guess what? If you're in a comfortable environment, where's the need for innovation?
Yeah,
I'm happy. Right. So anyways, I don't see how our guys, like I purposely hire workaholics. I can't help it. Everybody says, oh, you shouldn't do it. Why not? Why would I want to have somebody who wants to sit on a pillow in a corner, suck their thumb or do whatever they do? I don't know. I've never been in that kind of a mode, but I've been working since I was 9. It's hard for me to relate to resting and reclining. So that's one of the problems that has happened. It's happening even worse, and it really got glued into our psyche during COVID. Oh, I can stay home. Oh, I'm working from home. Yeah, right by the pool, petting the dog. And, are you kidding me? That does not work at Monroe. We have working from home. If you're doing a report, and like I said, I hire workaholics. I know that these guys are going to do, they're going to do their job, really do their job. Others, I don't know.
It's like a combination of, as you mentioned, you know, COVID kind of exacerbated some of that mindset and what you described. So it's almost like the culture that we've had for so long in the auto sector, partly it hasn't been challenged in a long time. Many brands have lived off of that because the innovation wasn't really part of the process. It was more so, you know, brand lifting and design of how can we just create the next version of this to get people excited again.
Right.
That's not innovation. That's just FOMO. That's people saying, I just want that new thing, that new version of that. But as you describe, is if you're in that kind of a culture, that's like turning the Titanic, trying to miss the iceberg. is you have to have some wild disruption to change what's going on culturally in order to break through that to then get to the place of actual innovation. So in how you're describing it, is does that lead you to the point of saying you are not convinced that brands that are legacy brands, as you described, are in a place where they can innovate until they break out of that? And can they break out of that? Or are they always going to be behind?
Okay, so really and truly, most automotive companies are marketing companies. That's really what it boils right down to. So a good example is the Cybertruck. The Cybertruck is a pickup truck. Go back 80 years. Look at what kind of trucks they had. What did they look like? How did they function? They're exactly the same.
Yeah.
They haven't moved. The Cybertruck is a giant mover. I mean, you've gone from you've gone from standard, ordinary gas or diesel. You can have your choice, gas or diesel. You've gone from that to an electric vehicle, fully electric. Then you've also gone from fully electric to 48 volts, and you've gone to you've gone to a drive-by-wire, and you've got all these different innovations that make everything rear-wheel steering. Who would have thunk that? But here's the deal: how do you do that when you've got all these assets hanging around your neck?
Right.
Okay. Think about it. They want people want to go to castings. Do you know how many? How many stamping machines you give up? Thousands. Thousands. Some of them aren't yours. Some of them are in the hands of suppliers. But how long are your contracts?
Right.
Decades. How do you get out from under? Especially when marketing is watching what's going on in Wall Street or something like that, saying, oh, boss, we can't do this. We got to go back to the way we were. Let's go back to the good old days. Sorry, you're just shit out of luck. There well, is people- no I was in the good old days, and they weren't all that good.
That's what I was going to say. Is you, you came from GM, right? Like, that's your background. No, where,
I
came from.
I was 10 years at Ford, and I went, I kind of like suffered through the Japanese invasion when Ford almost, well, they were bankrupt. If it wouldn't have been for the Ford family, they'd have been gone. But I can tell you for sure, that we're in the same situation. The Chinese have taken the place of the Japanese. As the Chinese say, the Japanese got lazy. And so did America, got lazy. And quite frankly, it's not gonna, it's not gonna be any different. The Chinese will take over the electric car market in the United States. I don't care if, how do I do this? Yeah, I don't care who the president is. I don't care. Yeah. They backed themselves into corners. It doesn't matter. You know, if you go out, there's a thing called, what is it? It doesn't matter whether it's tide or time. You can't stop it. You can't hold back the tide. And you can't hold back time. You can't buy a second for a bazillion dollars. It ain't going to happen. Unfortunately, people don't understand time. People say, oh, time is money. That's true. But you know what? It's not just money. It's irreconcilable. What's the
inevitable?
Word? Inevitable, but
irreconcilable.
You can't. You can't. You can't rectify what's going to happen here. You can't go back and change things.
Yeah.
And every time you make a dumb mistake based on today's information, you make another mistake. And when that mistake is made, you can't go backwards. You're screwed, and you're screwed forever. And now you've lost the time that you could have had doing the thing the right way, and on and on.
Well, the way you describe that too is I constantly, you brought up a great example too of how the Japanese market, when it came to the US with smaller cars and how that changed the game. And the response, I actually had this conversation with some people on my team the other day, and how you had a response from the domestic auto brands and others. So, okay, we're going to produce small cars. What was that like? Well, then you get K cars and you get these other smaller versions of something that it's this, we shrunk down and cut in half what we know how to do. And here you go. That's a small car. And then you, I mean, I grew up in the tuner world of in the '90s. It's like, okay, well, and again, Jared and his background, same thing. We come from the same type of legacy in that way. And you look at how you could take a Honda and put, I don't know how many pounds of boost on it. And it just, it was like, keep coming, baby. Do it.
Yeah.
But if you did that to a domestic vehicle, it's like, there's a very fine line before you just blow that thing up. Right. And it's because of the mentality, the approach of how the vehicles were built. And I think that to your description of, you think, as you're describing how you think the Chinese market is just, it's just inevitable with regard to NIO and BYD and the efforts being made there and how they can come to the States with a different mentality. I think to your point, then it's the American mentality of automotive brand. And how will the public here respond to that? But it, to your description, if the product is just better, and if it's better designed, and it's a better approach to giving them an electrified version of the car that they might want, that in my opinion, I think that would win out over time. But that branding piece that you just described, I think is going to be a hurdle too. I guess when do you think that that's going to be something that they might even consider approaching?
When it's too late.
Well, I mean, meaning mass market.
Like, when it's too late.
Yeah.
I was there. I watched it. I watched GM go from 60% to whatever they got now, 13.
Yeah.
When it starts to happen, you've got every, again, I go back to the MBAs. Every MBA is going to say, hey, this is only temporary. The good old days are going to come back. They're not.
My dad worked at Kodak, man. I know. It's going to be fine.
Oh, my God. There's a real... Oh, I can go on and on. Kodak and Xerox. Yep. Two. How could they be so bloody dumb?
They invented the digital image.
They invented the digital... But you know what else? They invented the mouse, click, all that stuff. That was all invented by those two companies, and they threw it away.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't go with our core competence. That's the other thing that as soon as I hear somebody say core competencies, I know they're screwed. They haven't got a chance. There is no way they're going to win, because when you focus on core competencies, you're telling me we got to focus on buggy whips. No more of this other stuff. Buggy whips. That's where it's at. Whale-borne corsets. I mean, you can go on and on. I can go on and on. And by the way,
I know. I love this.
When the Japanese came over, it wasn't just because they were small cars. They were really well built.
Yep.
And I will tell you, gasoline, there was an embargo. And we couldn't get oil in the United States. We had carefully decided that we don't want to drill for any oil around here. We might disturb a rat or a lizard. That would be bad. So we didn't have the capacity to pump the oil that we needed in order to make gasoline. When that happened, holy mackerel, I can remember people running out of gas, idling, trying to get to the gas station, trying to get to their spot in the pump. It was unbelievable. And then you'd see somebody in a Honda or a Toyota. Hello, bye. Good luck. I'm happy.
I got five gallons of gas. I'm good for
2 months. And that was really the fact that they were really well made. I can't remember what the hell, some little shit box. Anyhow, I had one of these things. And when I went to the dealer and said, hey, there's some really terrible noises coming out of it, he says, we're making these at 1 minute at a time. Every time it goes to 1 minute, they say, you got to take this, you know. But you know what? The Japanese, I mean, people were driving these things and saying, gee, I changed my oil, but I don't have any problems. Guess what happens when you go electric? You don't change the oil. Right. There's no oil to change. So we're getting into a situation where people have to, the average person is going to say, gas is pretty damn expensive and electricity is cheap. And gee, how come Fred doesn't have to change his oil? I mean, doesn't electric cars have oil to change or air filters to change? Or don't you have to on and on and on? You're not even flushing your radiator. These are the things that people haven't caught on yet. And when,
well, they equate everything you just described. I mean, I always reference this as that people don't think about it actively, but owning a car means you are buying two products to make a product experience. It's the car and the gasoline. And that's how it's been forever. And the idea of removing one of those, when people realize that, then they think, well, that's where that anxiety comes in of like, no, I'm familiar with and comfortable with, and I know about the idea of magic liquid. Don't take that. And so the idea of adding in a new fuel type that makes them have to think, but then I had this conversation actually this morning with a friend about the idea of, well, it's gasoline leveled the playing field. Is you could be rich and live in the hills and drive a really nice car and pull up to the gas station because you had to get gas. And across from you at the other pump could be someone who rents a small apartment and who has a hand-me-down Honda who doesn't have the same income as you, but both of you are buying your experience to drive a car and making it possible the same way because of the fuel. But if you switch to electric, that it almost creates almost like a classist system, because then you have someone who can say, I fill up at home 95% of the time. It costs me $5 or $8, wherever you live. That other person still has to go find their fuel in finding charging. And that creates a different dynamic in how you own the car, how you sell the car. It's a very different world.
Well, I can tell you, I used to have a Jeep Wrangler, a Rubicon, and it cost me about $250 a month to fill her up. And now I pay $11 for my wife pays it. I've been waiting for my Cybertruck, but at the end of the day, my wife, our bill is about $11. Now we do have solar and we do have batteries in the basement. But $11 is, and actually the $11, that's for, that's for, the charge, because we are still hooked up, to the grid.
Yeah.
You don't use it much.
Yeah.
But it's a handy backup for $11. Good insurance. Well, but that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, and most of the people that I know that do charge, that charge at home and whatnot, the highest number I've heard is $22.
Yeah.
And that's it. But you know what? I told you that engineers are cheap. But we are a country of cheapskates. No matter what you do and where you go. Oh, a cheap price beats an expensive price every time. And that's all you got to remember.
Yeah.
Whatever is the cheapest, that's what we get. And so consequently, we live in a dream world here that the rest of the planet does. That's why Europe is so big into electrification. They're not getting the oil that they used to get from Russia. Cheap oil made a big difference in their lives. Well, now cheap. And then when you get in there, you go, you know, this is like $15 a gallon. Oh, it's only $5 per liter. A liter in a gallon is the same, isn't it?
Right.
No. There's four of those liters, actually four and a bit more liters. People don't get that. They go to Europe and they see these gas prices and they think, oh, that's a gallon. No, it's a quart.
So,
and they don't quite catch on. They see the big ass bill and they say, how big is this gas tank?
People don't know how to do conversions. Americans aren't thinking in metric. They're not doing conversions. They think one-to-one on virtually anything and everything, right? And I think the way you described too on the, you know, they will go to a gas station that's 30 miles away because it was 5 cents cheaper for the gallon of gas.
Right.
You know? And but then on the counter to that too is you'll also see people that are willing to spend for convenience. Also, they'll buy something that they perceive as a better thing for their need, and they're willing to spend the money for it. And I've had people say that to me about gas, is they'll say, you know what, I get you fill up at home for $8 and you can drive 300 miles, but frankly, I don't care. I will happily go to the gas station and spend $50 to fill up in 5 minutes. And so the counter is they don't even realize the ownership experience of that, because they just perceive what they know. And because the fill up takes longer, filling up for $8, it's like, yeah, but I wonder when we're going to break through on that conversation, that narrative. Well, I think it's generational.
Here's the thing. If you're charging at home, you don't waste any time. You drive in, you plug in, you go in. You get up in the morning, you get out, you unplug and you go. So how much time have I lost? let's see, it must take about 8 seconds to plug in and maybe another 3 seconds to pull out.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Well, I got to go to the gas station and you're going to have to go and pump up. No, not unless I'm on a trip. I don't do that.
Well, right. No, that's a great point is the trip piece. And I think that the way that I've said to people when I've heard them say, I tell people all the time, it takes me 10 seconds to charge. And I don't subscribe to that because average people, they want to know the full story. Yeah. I can say it takes 10 seconds to pump gas because what we're both referring to is the act of connecting to your fuel. Hmm. What they want to know is, no, what's the actual fill up time?
But the thing is, if we talk about fill up time, my fill up time is zero. Their fill up time is however long they stand there holding onto that stinky nozzle. At the end of the day, there's another thing they don't take into account. I've been told anyways, this is changing, especially in the area of California, especially in LA and in San Francisco, where, we don't need policemen. They're so rough. So you go in and you've got your Ferrari. You slide in, you put the old nozzle in there, and the next thing you know, a guy's got his gun in your back or a knife up your nose. And you know, that doesn't really work for me. In the old days, maybe, but not when I get old. So here's the deal. As far as I'm concerned, I haven't seen one burglar or nasty person in my garage while I'm plugging in.
Sure.
It just hasn't happened. Yeah. But I can guarantee you, if you watch the news doesn't even put all the carjackings and robberies. They don't even put it on the news. It would take up too much time. Right. And it's so common, everybody just shrugs it off. But unless somebody gets shot or something like that, that does not happen with an electric vehicle. First off, they're not in the same kind of nasty areas. They're almost always by a shopping mall or something.
Sure.
It's not the same. And at home, like I said, I haven't seen one nasty person in my garage. Except for me. That doesn't count. That's
not a Sandy, it seems that you're just all about efficiency and this lean effort. And that's that engineering mind, right? So you're talking about, you know, hiring these workaholics. You have this, let's call it a cesspool of creativity. I say that in the best way possible. I said good day because
I was thinking of an ocean or a perfect pond or something.
I'm hearing your dirty mouth talk. You're talking about you're the only creepy guy in your garage, you know, all these things. But I love your candor about it. You have a wisdom to you, but a very honest transparency. But as you said, I'm just going to call it out there, you know, 70 plus years old and you're enjoying this. Because here we are, you know, Matt and I from our generation, my grandpa would have been 90 something years old. He adopted Toyota. They went hybrid, you know, and he fought in World War II against the Germans. So it is that mindset and being willing to accept that. And that's what I really love about your stance of sitting there with Elon, breaking it down, all the things. I saw your interview about trucks and their purpose. Yeah. The Lightning is this, the Rivian is this, the Cybertruck is this. And they are different tools for the job, right? I work with Snap-on Tools a lot. They're the best tool on the market, right? I hosted something with your good friend Jim Farley and Larry Holt, that Multimatic. I'm talking about the GTD and the whole range of Mustangs. Here's Ford as a manufacturer going EcoBoost, 2GT, 2 Dark Horse, Dark Horse R, GT3, GT4, and GTD. They're taking all that technology and how are they applying that to EV? So here's the big three applying this. Toyota, as you said, refined their vehicle. They developed, and now they're going hydrogen. So that's another whole conversation. But no,
they've always been pushing that.
Yeah, they've been pushing that for quite some time.
I threw a lot of stuff at you, Sandy, to say that you got a cesspool of imagination here and take that little genome and let it grow like a sea monkey.
Sea monkeys don't. I know a lot about cesspools, and there you see monkeys in there. Do not send the kids over with a little net to try and catch the sea monkey. Those are nasty.
You know what I'm saying?
I got it. Anyhow, at the end of the day, you know, we can have a lot of fun with it, but the problem really and truly, again, is that those little kids, you have kids, I'm sure of it.
Yes.
Okay, so here's the deal. Did you ever ask your kids what they like? Do they like a big V8? Nope. Do they like the smell of gasoline? Nope. Do they want you to pollute the planet? Nope. That's the guys that I talk to. I'm not talking to you guys. I'm talking to the kids because they think, and you know what? I could probably get away with it now. We lost one of our people and he kind of like slowed down a lot of the stuff that I wanted to talk about. But I have a story from last year, actually, where this little kid came up and I was just loading some 2x4s into the Rivian. And this little kid comes up, maybe 3.5 feet tall or something like that. And he sticks his hand out and he goes, "Do I have the honor of meeting Mr. Sandy Monroe?" And I'm looking down and I'm going, yeah. I mean, I wasn't expecting that. This kid was incredibly precocious. He said, "Oh, my colleagues and I watch you on our iPods during our lunch break, and we discuss this during our recesses." And I'm going, "Huh?
Right.
Where the hell did you come from, kid? Right. You aren't like anybody." Anyway, the one thing that he said, that I am so disappointed in my father. And by the way, his mother's right in back of him, and she's got her hand over her mouth. Laughing her ass off while I'm dying here. I don't know how to address this kid. He's got a bigger vocabulary. I never used the word colleague until I was like 35. I don't know that. I mean,
never used it.
It's not a, my colleagues and I watch you at lunch break. Wow.
Amazing.
So anyways, he said, my father is such a disappointment. He hasn't quite caught on to electrification.
What a shift.
Holy mackerel. And then he starts going on and on. And his mother, she now is backed up, turned around, looking in the opposite direction. And I mean, she's got her hand over her nose. She's bent over, laughing her ass off at me suffering here with this kid. I don't know how to answer these questions. It's too deep. So I said, "Hey, I got to get going." And his mother says, "Yes, Johnny," or whatever his name was. Mr. Monroe has to get going. "Thank you so much, Mr. Monroe." I shook his hand and I reached into my pocket and I one of these, right? Little giveaway things. So I take it out of my pocket. I hand it to him and he's holding it there and he's staring at it. And he says, "This is my most prized possession."
Whoa.
I said, "Really?"
Wow.
He said, "This pen will always be precious to me."
Wow.
Holy crap.
Yeah,
then he reaches into his pocket and he pulls out his old prized possession. And it's this little face mask with sharks on it. And he hands it to me and I'm going, "This thing looks like it's loaded with snot." But anyways, I take it, okay, and I'm holding on to it. And he said, "This protected me during COVID and I want you to have it."
Wow.
And I saying, "I couldn't possibly take that from you. You can have both these prized possessions." He said, "No, no, I have to give you something and you must have it."
Wow.
And I look at his mother and she's going, okay. She was interested in getting rid of that thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyways, I took it. I shook his hand and whatnot. And he walked away and he's walking and he's staring at that pen.
Wow.
Holy crap. If I could have that effect on, like, say, guys your age, everybody be driving electric vehicle.
I was gonna say, or executives at brands. That,
well,
thank
I don't want to go that far. I don't want to go.
But anyway, you are having a huge influence on the conversation. I think that the benefit of what's coming out of even this discussion here today is more and more people are getting exposed to the fact that going electric and getting an electric car, there's a lot of FUD out there. There's a lot of things that people read and memes that get shared that are not steeped in reality whatsoever. And then they have an opportunity to see a very practical and straightforward conversation from either a teardown video you've done, an interview you've done, this discussion. And it opens them up to understanding that it's not odd. It's not weird. It's a maybe a different thing that they've never thought of before, but it's not about the idea of it being vastly different. And I think that's the opportunity that comes from a lot of these conversations. And I think it's so a young person who hasn't had conditioning around something and they get a chance to see what you're talking about and it has the impact it has on someone that young. Again, I think you're right. This youngster was definitely unique, but either way, it speaks to the fact that conditioning plays a role, and to decondition people out of what they've known for a long time, it can be hard. But if younger people are saying, hey, this is the stuff I care about, well, we have some generational shift that will be a part of the process for sure.
Let me ask you this, and I'm going to interject there, Sandy, because I have kids. And Matt, do you have, I can't remember, do you have kids or no?
I have a corgi. He's not going to college.
No.
Yeah. Wow, it's a big
short legs. Never going to be an athlete. He's got really short legs. So Sandy, I have a 17 and a 9-year-old. So quite a big departure, you know, separation there. So, but
you
my 17-year-old drives
time. Never.
Yeah, 7 years apart. Yeah. So same wife, FYI. So if you're asking, what do you have children, and what are their stance?
My children? Yes, yes. I have one who's probably a little older than you, and he has a wife that's exactly the same age as him, and two grandchildren. Awesome. So my two grandchildren, my grandson just turned 5, and he said, "Why is Daddy's car so noisy and yours is quiet?" And I said, "Because the Starship Enterprise doesn't make any noise."
You got to say the Millennium Falcon, though. Come on.
Well, he's only 5. I mean,
I know.
He knows a little bit about. Anyhow, so and that's kind of like what's coming along. So it's going to be the same as you know, the guys. I grew up on a farm, and there were a lot of very old people in my area, and some of them were still stuck on horses. They just would not move until they die. The horses are dying, and then all of a sudden, fine, I'll do something else. But they had carriages. They rode horses. I mean, I hated them. These things stink. They step on your toes. They bite.
They bite. Yeah.
Oh, I wanted to. My sister was also a horse person. She loved equestrian riding and stuff like that. Anyways, I used to drive her to this where she stabled her horse and everything and whatnot. And there was a really hot chick. I thought, you know what? I'm going to go on and say hello. So I was in my 20s and whatnot. So anyways, I walked over. And as I'm walking over, she had a thoroughbred. It was called Hungarian Rhapsody, but it really had a bigger name. So anyways, she goes walking and she grabs the leash or the whatever you call it, the thing in her mouth. She pulls it down to get him into the barn. He takes one look, says, "Forget it, I ain't doing it." And she did not have her helmet on. And he reached over, bit her on the top of the head, picked her up, walked 2 steps backwards, spit her out, and then he drifted off to go in whatever horses do. And I'm looking at her, and her head's bleeding all over the place.
Oh,
I'm thinking,
God.
Oh man, look at the time. I got to get going. you know, that's my image of a horse. When you need them the most, they don't find their way home. Bullshit. That lassie didn't do it either. So it's kind of like,
run off.
You know what? They just run off. They bite you. They'll step on you. They'll kick you. And then they'll go their merry way because they really don't like being slaves. I like the idea of horses under the hood. Actually, I've got a great graphic. It's fabulous. One is a picture of a horse. Okay. Big. That's 1 horsepower. Then I have 1 horsepower and I've got a little dinky 1 horse single lung engine with a little teeny transmission. And then I've got the same thing you've got inside your window regulator to make your window go up and down. It's basically that big, and it's 1 horsepower. All of them have the same amount of horsepower. That's ponderous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Think about it. Do you think the guy at the turn of the century, if I showed him that little teeny tiny electric motor with a little gearbox on it and said, "Hey, this is equivalent to your horse,"
Right. You're a moron. Okay. And that would be the way it would go. And that's where we are right now. We're right. Well, we're showing them the future, but you know what? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him think. That's right. Kind of like
it's like how many horsepower?
Exactly.
You know. Exactly. Yeah. And no, I think it's interesting that you bring that up. It's because it's one of those things that I talk about this all the time with folks is how do people understand tangibly what you're referencing? And horsepower is born out of that. Was the idea of well, it's like imagine there are 80 horses pulling this thing. That's how much power it is. And they go, that's a lot of horses. Oh my God. And now, you know, it just kept going to the point at which you have a, you know, a twin turbo Nissan, you know, GTR that's got 1,000 horsepower. And you go, that's a lot of horses. But now this tactile response to what do we know about like fueling and gas and how do you experience the car? It's like, well, I'm buying a gallon of gas. Well, what else is a gallon? Well, it's a liquid. I get it. I know what I buy a gallon of milk every week. I get what a gallon is,
right? Yeah. Like that's how much you could actually till in one day, right? That's the unit of measure.
Yeah. It's these things that it's relatable. And I think the thing that always comes up across in electrification is that because electricity is for the most part, it's no one understands how it works. They just know the lights turn on. And so
lick an outlet and then you'll find out.
Right. You'll learn.
Don't do that at home, kids. I was only kidding. No, right.
This is a disclaimer. Do not do what Sandy says. Thank you.
He'll send you a pen if you don't do that.
Yeah. You won't need it if you do.
Yeah.
And then don't stick the pen in the outlet. But that's it.
You won't be able to lick the envelope. You guys are nuts. I never talk like this.
We're nuts. I love it. I'm here for it. So I feel like I'm looking at my older self in a mirror right now. So I appreciate it, Sandy. I think it's great. But you have just this great insight and knowledge that you really simplify. And it seems like you're having a lot of fun at the end of the day. And I'm going to go, you know, don't want to take up too much of your time because, you know, we got you for an hour here. So just a few more moments. But speaking of fun, talking to Elon, his speech cadence always throws me off, but what an interesting interview.
Yeah.
I mean, he named two of his vehicles after Spaceballs references. Cybertruck is a DeLorean in a truck form. He talk about unnecessary things like radiators. You're talking about combustion engine stuff. He can make his cars fart. I mean, he's just having fun with this while refining it. So all of the judging, all the scrutineering, all of, you know, the breaking down of it, Cybertruck is on the tip of our tongue. So you've been the closest to it. I don't know if Matt's seen one in person at Expo in Austin or wherever it may be, but I kind of want to bring it back to just most recently the Cybertruck because everybody's kind of shooting holes in it or throwing steel balls through the window on the debut, but now it's fought back. But what are your thoughts on Cybertruck and the whole Elon experience?
Well, I think it was his son that said, if this is the future, how come it don't look like the future? And really and truly, that is the truth out of the mouth of babes. That's why I don't talk to too many people. I don't talk to anybody my age, but I don't talk to too many people. I'll go to these things. I get invited to lots of, you know, little doodads. You put on a tie and they give you some shrimp and, you know, and it's usually light beer, which doesn't work for me at all. I go to these things and whatnot, but I don't have anything to say to them because I really what I want to do is I want to talk to their kids. I want to talk to that kid that's, like I said, I think a kid was like 7 or 8 years old, probably even younger than that, up to about 15, 16. That's where I get all my ideas. If I can put, and that's what I do. I do practice. When I first started giving lectures on how to use our system and stuff like that, I told my son, bring all your little friends over and set them down, and I'm going to teach them how to use my software and my process. My ex-wife thought I was nuts, and more worse. But anyways, she was convinced that this was like stupidest thing ever. But if I could convince somebody who was in grade 2, and that's when I started them, so I'd that be 8 years old, 9 years old, something like that, 7, 8, 9, I don't know. Anyway, if I could figure out how to tell them the story that I wanted them to remember, then I could teach anybody. And I found that
Okay, so I can rattle off formulas all day long. I was trained. I know all this crap. But you know what's interesting, or what's the better way? When somebody starts asking me questions and I say, okay, well, what's the difference between 12 volts and 48 volts? And I pick up two wires, and one of them's the size of my baby finger, and the other one's the size of my thumb. And I say, see this fat, big fat one? That's 12 volts. See this one? That's 48 volts. Well, why is that? Well, that's getting technical, but basically you multiply voltage times amperage. And if you increase the voltage, the amperage goes down, and it's the same thing then. You get the same amount of power. Oh, that's good. Oh, I understand that. But if you go in and I give them Ohm's law, and it's okay, they just glaze over and they're gone. I don't think that that's smart.
I think it makes you
feel better, I guess, or makes you feel important if you're an engineer and you can, you know, rattle off a bunch of acronyms or something. But to me, it doesn't work. That's why on our videos, people that that can't get away from acronyms, I don't let them on. I want them to be like SORB. Who knows what the hell that is? Well, at the end of the day, that's the worst kind of a crash you can have. They show you the side impact and the front and rear impact, but SORB is, that's the killer. And that small offset barrier crash. Anyways, that kind of stuff doesn't resonate with people. Nope. But if you tell them that, hey, if you smash into the corner of your vehicle, into a building or whatever, that wheel is going to come and say hello right there in the front. That's the kind of stuff that gets their attention or gets the point across. So yeah, doing it like that, I think is the best way. I truly believe that I did my absolute best to get the point across in the simplest possible fashion, because the education system does not teach 90% of the people what's going on in the world. There's only about 10 or 15% of the people probably could grasp what was going on if I went into the kind of detail that an engineer might like. So I want to get the word out. I don't want to pound my chest or whatever.
No, you're speaking to my soul, Sandy. I mean, that's the work that I'm doing with the company I founded, ChargeWay, is just that, is to simplify how we explain charging, using colors for plug types and numbers for power levels, and handing it to everyday people in a way that they can grasp. Yeah. Because the moment, like you said, the moment you start throwing acronyms at folks, their eyes glaze over. They understand simple math, like you were saying, they can do simple math.
Yeah.
But once it dives into the engineering, it becomes wildly intimidating, and people, they just shy away. You know, the easier we can make it, the better. So,
well, actually, I have one chart that I wanted to show you, or I thought we were going to bring up, maybe wherever it is. Here it is. Okay. Remember I was talking about the Chinese are going to take over the world and stuff like that. Here's the chart.
Oh,
okay. Cow. So the top one is Geely. Yeah. The second one's Stellantis, but it isn't because they've got so many things in Europe. It's because they've got so many things in China.
Yeah.
And then the next one is Volkswagen. And that's not because they've got so many cars in Europe. It's because they've got so many cars in China. And then you've got Shanghai Automotive. And then you've got a whole plethora of other people. But at the end of the day, where's GM?
Yeah.
Where's Ford? I mean, what are they thinking? They're thinking, this is kind of like a joke. It's no joke. I already been through this once. I can't believe I'm living through the Japanese invasion a second time, only with Chinese people. And they won't hold them out. I mean, really and truly, okay, we had a lot of fun, but the sobering part of this whole program is that if these guys don't move, they're dead in the water. If they think for a second they're going to go back to the good old days, they're out of their minds.
Yeah.
They're out of their minds. You want to take a look at who really buggered up? Volkswagen.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be lucky if they even have a place in like a footnote in what's going on right now.
Yeah.
They had the whole world by the short curlies, whatever. And at the end of the day, now what's happening? I mean, this is tragic. People need to read history books. They really do. They need to read history.
Hubris is a cruel mistress. You know, it's all of a sudden it's like, do you know who we are? And your response would be, yes, I do. And you've seen this before.
Right.
How are you not seeing what's happening? Yeah. And yeah, it's a lack of appreciation for what has once been. And when you're in your own 30-day cycle all the time of got to move that metal, 30-day cycle, let's see what we can do. That lack of being able to project out and pay attention to what's happening around you, it leads to what you're describing.
Yeah.
It's sad.
And right before we hit record, Sandy, I said, you know, I come at this from a very enthusiastic standpoint, eagerness, and some people are seeing you or knowing about you for the first time. So I think it's great that you're with your wisdom, with your education of being at one of the big three, applying that technology, applying that wisdom, that foresight, also the eagerness to educate the youth in a digestible way is you speak for the trees. You're a little bit of a Lorax here where you're talking about EV in an emotional, cool kind of way. And it's very relevant. It's very on time. So, you know, I thank you and Matt, you just have, you have the same eagerness, but with a more educated mindset. I come at it from I'm in motorsports. I do like the sound of a cool, you know, 2JZ or, you know, whatever V8. But at the end of the day, I liked what you said. My kids, they're not asking for the big, loud and proud. This is a generational thing, but I think that you're teaching this unlearning kind of perspective of saying, hey, I got a Cybertruck on order. I'm paying $11. This is what it looks like. You're thinking about the wrong things. You're just like, oh, sound, audio, smells. Well, it's a whole different tactile experience.
Yeah.
Well, that's the five senses response, right? Is people when they pop a hood, they're used to seeing chrome, hearing the response, smelling the fuel, and again, it's a different world with EV. But then it's like, what do you enjoy the most out of that car, though? Is it that standstill moment, or is it go drive the thing and enjoy it when you're driving it? What does it feel like when you're driving it?
Yeah,
you know, it is a very as you're describing, Jared, it's this very different response, but it's still a sensory response, you know? And again, to Sandy's description of why does that car stink, Grandpa? It's just like, I'm going to tell you this, but it's outdated.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you're aware of it, but I am an engine engineer. Did you know that?
You're an engine engineer?
I designed engines.
Yes. I actually did read that.
Vulcan V6, that was one of the engines that I had a lot to do with. And I also did the engine assembly line for that thing and the testing. The Pentastar engine, we had Chrysler went bankrupt. Somebody had to finish it off, and that was us. That thing won Boards Automotive more times than you can shake a stick at. I worked on monoblocks, no cylinder head. You want to have compression ratio? I can give you whatever you want. And I can guarantee you that I can burn anything in it, from perfume to diesel fuel. I can make that work no matter what.
Wow.
I'm telling you. I worked on the mod engine. So the ones that they race now in NASCAR, that was, if it's Ford, I had something to do with it. So I kind of know a little bit about that, but it's not a hard transition when you look at, again, if I go and look at it with engineering eyes. Best I can do is about 43% efficiency out of an engine. What's the efficiency out of an electric motor? How about 97, 98? Yeah. At the end of the day, these are the kinds of things that nobody teaches unless you happen to be, unless you happen to have taken the same path that I did. Nobody teaches that stuff. And there's so many of these things that are sitting out there. The marketing guys do not want everybody to know the ratio between how much a full tank of gas is versus the same amount of energy out of a very small battery pack. It's kind of like, that's why when I go, I seen somebody took a couple of pictures from one of the presentations that I did. If you look in at the turn of the century, I have a slide. It says here's 1900, and it's on Fifth Avenue. And I say, find the car, and there's one car.
Yeah.
Okay. Surrounded by horses. And then the next one, oh, here's 1914. Okay. That's 14 years later. find the horse, one horse.
Yep.
The average person thinks, oh, this must have taken centuries. Oh, they already had gas stations. Nope, they did not. All these things that people think about now happened in the old days, but a whole lot faster. And the reason for that was because we were a different kind of an American. Everybody wanted to be an entrepreneur. Everybody wanted to be rich. Nobody was sitting at home on a pillow. Nobody. Unless they had some serious problems. But nobody, everybody wanted to work. Things change. When you become complacent, you become the Roman Empire in the last days.
And you can only tell the future by looking at the past, right?
That's
so
correct.
You're looking at this. There was a great documentary I watched the other day, and it comes to my mind. It was not a documentary, but the story of BlackBerry.
I watched that movie. Oh my God.
I mean, isn't that what we're talking about right now?
It is.
Like that's, you know, you have this crazy, again, I like the word cesspool. I'm going to keep using that. You have this good energy. You have this lightning rod of creativity and unique kids and all this stuff. And then just losing sight because, you know, like you said, the money, the time, all that. If nobody's seen that, watch BlackBerry. I think it's
the best movie that I've seen. Well, no, it's not. The best movie
is Aviator.
It's Maverick. Top Gun Maverick.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh, I can't stop. I've been flying a lot. I've watched that movie twice, three times. Once going to Europe, I just keep watching it over and over again. Fabulous. But second best is BlackBerry.
Yeah.
Because it is so. It's so America, even though he's Canadian.
Yeah.
It's so America. It's so America. We've got it. It's right in the center of our hands. I got it.
Yep.
Let's try and figure out how to screw it up. We'll make it cheaper. We'll get friends from China to help. Every time I go to one of these things and there's a whole bunch of inventors and we're going to take this to China and it'll be gone in 6 months. What?
Yep.
Doesn't matter. I'm on my way now. Thank you. Have a nice day. I mean, if you don't understand who you're fighting, it's probably a good idea to go and read a book about it or at least watch a video with this guy beating the shit out of somebody else. Where did they get that information from? Oh, hi, I'm from Harvard.
Yep.
And you're cooked. That's it.
Great insight, Sandy. I don't want to take up any more of your time, Matt.
Yeah.
I appreciate your insight. Any closing thoughts or comments or anything for Sandy?
Well, no, I mean, Sandy, thank you for taking the time. I mean, again, you've got a voice that's reaching a wide audience already. So thanks for sharing it with our audience. And at the same time too, as you describe, there's so much happening right now that's basically happening in real time. And there's so many mm-hmm. things that are getting overlooked. And I think the more that people that are both in industry and outside of industry get a chance to, you know, really have a practical conversation about that is going to be helpful. Hopefully it elevates other people's efforts if possible. But at the same time, it sets the stage for, you know, what the next few years are going to keep looking like and changing. So appreciate you sharing your insights on that. So.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for allowing me on. Hopefully, you know, nobody rejects you or says, I don't ask this guy again. So
no, you leave that up to Jared and I. We solve that problem all the time.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I've gotten
editing
come back a couple times. No, I have not. But Sandy, you give it in this digestible way. I'm really excited to show my 9-year-old and maybe when he sees you, he can get this most cherished item from you as well. But I'm really excited to show him. Yeah, and the 17-year-old, you know, he wants to kind of do what I do, but he's driving a small little Toyota Corolla. We only got one planet. Appreciate your insight, your kind of inventiveness, as well as your eagerness to not only ingest, but also digest this kind of knowledge and share it with the world. And your perspective is definitely a valuable asset, man. So thank you so much, Sandy.
Well, thank you for having me. That was great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What's in the mug? What's in the mug? Is it an IPA or is it just tea or coffee or bourbon?
No, I don't drink bourbon. It was Canadian whiskey. And the reason for that is because people don't like it when I start coughing. I'm going to see the same guy again about what's causing this stuff, but I know what gets rid of it. And if I have like
Grandpa's cough medicine.
two swallows of this and boom, no, I didn't cough one time during this thing. But I don't know why it is I had to drink. It's real hardship.
Yeah, real hardship.
having a drink while I'm talking. But at the end of the day, I got to figure out what's going on. But you can cut that part out.
No, we're keeping it. I love it because, again, this is unadulterated you. You feel a little unapologetic at times. So
I'm not.
Again, anybody listening right now or seeing this, do yourself a favor, educate yourself alongside Sandy Monroe. You know, it's perspective, it's angle, it's a beautiful thing. So thank you so much. Yeah. And they can find you at Monroe Live on IG or look on YouTube. Yeah. Some great interviews, some great insight, great perspective. So thank you again so much, Sandy. And thank you, Matt, of course.
Thanks for listening to the Electrify podcast, brought to you by the creators of Electrify Expo. Be sure to catch full video episodes on YouTube at Electrify TV and follow along on social media for daily clips and more.